Egypt's pharaoh has been toppled. Real democracy and accountability have been promised to the people, and many are tasting relative freedom for the first time in decades.
We felt much more freedom we have never seen. We have never seen. After this nightmare, big nightmare, Mubarak.
But as I found out, elements of the old regime remain defiant. The forces of militant secularism and the pro-Israeli and the pro-West diehards are trying to hijack the people's revolution.
The corruption is still there. That's why we insist to stay here to continue our revolution.
Like most Egyptians, Ahmed al-Assi had been waiting all his life for the events of January and February 2011. Staunchly opposed to former President Mubarak's dictatorship, he was prevented from expressing his opinion during the Mubarak years.
The degree that the old regime has managed to sort of take hold of the country, it really had its teeth, you know, fangs dug into every aspect of life in Egypt.
But as popular anti-regime protests erupted in Cairo's Tahrir Square, he got swept away by events which restored his faith in the Egyptian people.
There is a genuine feeling amongst the people that they have shed their fear of the previous regime and that they are ready for serious change.
Ahmed wanted to exploit the window of opportunity presented by the fall of Mubarak to help his brothers and sisters in Palestine. His idea was to drum up enough support to drive in convoy to the Rafah border with Gaza, a border which has been subject to a joint Egyptian-Israeli military and economic blockade for 4 years.
We want humanitarian aid to get through. We want medical supplies. We want foodstuffs to get in, and we want building supplies to get in.
Egypt. Weeks after the victory of the revolution, Tahrir Square was still buzzing with life. As we filmed, we were mobbed by people stating their demands. And against the army's wishes, hundreds had also set up a permanent camp in Tahrir Square to keep the pressure on the authorities to fulfill their wishes.
This camp was set up about a week after Hosni Mubarak was ousted. And the people here say they're not going until all their demands are met, namely a new constitution, the release of all political prisoners, and the complete dismantlement of the former ruling National Democratic Party.
The old regime is still here. It's like a cancer throughout the whole body. The regime is still in control of all aspects of society, and people are being oppressed by them, by the state security.
We haven't achieved all the revolution's demands yet. We're calling for the disbandment of the security forces and we want to end the state of emergency. Also, we want all those who are arrested because of their political activity and who refuse to work for the regime to be freed.
As hundreds of thousands gathered in Tahrir Square for Friday prayers, the Imam, or prayer leader, emphasized the duty that each Muslim has to each other to help their brothers in need.
Friday prayers have just finished here, right in the heart of Maidan Tahrir. And the Imam has basically made an appeal to the armed forces to do the right thing and deliver democracy to this country and not steal it away from the people. He's also stressed the independence of religious institutions, that they can't just be a mouthpiece for the regime. And he said from this day onwards, the sovereignty will be with God alone.
But despite the large crowds and the revolutionary sentiment, it soon became clear that Ahmed would have his work cut out persuading Egyptians to join him in his quest to bring the Rafah border down. For millions of tourists, Egypt is the land of pharaohs and pyramids. Tourists also visit the country's Islamic monuments in droves. But in between the Kodak moments, they almost certainly won't dwell on the political repression that has plagued the country for decades. This man, Hosni Mubarak, was responsible for that. Domestically, Mubarak brutally cracked down on any opposition. He rigged elections, stifled the media, and turned Egypt into a police state where the use of torture was rampant. Mubarak, his family and his cronies got rich, while the majority of Egypt's 83 million people languished in poverty.
There was injustice, corruption and major oppression. Egyptians weren't allowed to be themselves, so this revolution was necessary.
Mubarak's foreign policy was characterized by craven support for the United States, which provided him with $2 billion worth of mostly military aid per year. Meanwhile, Mubarak also favored Israel, with which Egypt has a peace treaty over the Palestinians. For example, he supported the Israeli siege of Gaza, which blockades the Palestinian territory by air, sea, and land.
The Palestinian people have suffered greatly, and the old regime had a big role in oppressing them. Unfortunately, there was a huge collaboration between the old regime and the Zionists. But the Zionists have no rights over Palestinian land. Palestinian land is Arab land.
Eventually, something had to give. The masses couldn't live with their lack of dignity and prospects any longer. Suddenly, the man who had secured stability by turning Egypt into a police state couldn't deliver stability any longer.
I say to you again that I would never take any decision that wasn't for the benefit of the Egyptian people as a whole. I have their security and stability at heart, and I will always defend them.
He refused to go. He used his thugs to attack protesters. But in the end, the army pushed him into retirement. But how much had Egypt really changed? Meanwhile, Ahmed al-Assi prepared to set off from Cairo to Gaza to test Egypt's new resolve. But the initial signs weren't promising. The Egyptians who'd pledged to come with him, by and large, didn't turn up. But the main problem was transport. Suddenly, the coach company didn't have any space for anybody to go.
They were saying that they're really weary of foreigners, because there is rumor of foreigners dressed up as Bedouins in Sinai and doing like kidnapping and shooting.
Eventually, and after a bit of hard bargaining, Ahmed found two taxis willing to take him to the Rafah border. The convoy set off more in hope than expectation, anticipating that it would be turned back by the army or security services.
I asked the driver if there were any problems us going through, and he said if we don't have clearance, most likely we're not going to be let through.
Why would you need clearance?
I don't know. I really don't know.
Rafah is around a 5-hour drive from Cairo, passing through the Sinai Peninsula near the Mediterranean coastline of North Africa and up towards occupied Palestine. Rafah is the entry point from Egypt into blockaded Gaza, or Free Palestine as the Gazans call it. As we drove out of Cairo, progress was slow because of the number of army checkpoints. These increased in frequency as we reached Sinai. And as we approached the Suez Canal, one of the world's major trading routes, we were detained at a checkpoint by a secret police officer who tried to dissuade us from proceeding. But to our amazement, an hour and a half later, he waved us on. This simply wouldn't have happened a few weeks previously.
We were politely interrogated, and basically we were asked why we're going. They asked for all of a list of all of the people traveling, their identification, and what their jobs are, what they do for a living, and why we were going. And I simply told the officer, it was a police officer, not an army officer, although the army was present there. And they asked if we had permission. I told them we don't have permission, but I did let your people know.
So we finally made it to Al Arish. It was a very long journey. We passed several checkpoints. We didn't think we'd make it this far. The Egyptian authorities did try to persuade the convoy not to go as far as the Rafah border. But as soon as we got here, people have cottoned on to the idea that actually this convoy and opening the Rafah border might be a good thing. And many, many people have promised to accompany the convoy to the border.
That night, we gathered in the main square of the town to listen to local leaders who insisted that the gains of the revolution were still fragile. They call for Egypt to revoke its peace treaty with Israel and for former President Hosni Mubarak to be prosecuted.
I really don't know. I just don't want you guys to get in trouble for, you know, because it would mean...
Well, we don't want to give the impression that this is a foreign-led or...
Right.
If someone explicitly asks Gaza, can we say yes?
I don't want to ruin our chances of being able to gather, like, a large mass for the next big push.
The next morning, the morning of the planned march to Gaza, started with much optimism. The pro-Palestinian activists gathered in Al Arish's main square. But things soon took a worrying turn. As I started asking for opinions, I got more than I bargained for. Soon things got really nasty, and we were forced to stop filming.
So who do you think these guys were?
Quite possibly they could have been ex-NDP people. They could have been sent by... I honestly don't know. It's just a wild guess at this point. But
do
I'm guessing
you think they were reflective of public opinion around here?
Absolutely not. And I think what was happening is that you had like two or three main people that I saw that were saying a lot of weird things that, you know, they kept referring to us as spies, kept referring to us as Israelis.
They riled up everybody else.
And they riled up everyone else, yes.
So what's the plan now? Are we still going ahead with the march to Gaza or not?
I think we should. I think that we're going to still try.
Back in Cairo, but far away from the excitement of Tahrir Square, not much really seems to have changed since the revolution. Most Egyptians still live in poor neighborhoods such as this, overcrowded, cramped, and dirty.
We're here in Houda City. It's a very poor area in Cairo. And as soon as we've come, we've been surrounded by people, and they're all telling us that there are no jobs, there's no future for their children, high electricity prices, not many services around here. And for them, basically, the revolution which has just occurred means nothing whatsoever.
There are no jobs and there's no food. Before we go to sleep, we feel scared. And when we wake up, we feel scared. We're not asking for much. We only want stability and jobs for our children.
Houda City is a world away from the style Egypt's affluent elite is accustomed to. The tiny minority which controls most of Egypt's wealth live in secluded villas and shop at the most plush shopping centers. But you won't find that here.
The old regime was all a lie. And now that we know that the wealth of the people was stolen, we should get this money back to improve our situation. They took this money from us and it belongs to us.
Next, we travel to another part of Cairo, again a poor area, from which the heroes of the revolution mostly came. This is the neighborhood of Mustafa El-Sawi, a 26-year-old laboratory technician who was shot dead while protesting against Mubarak during the revolution. His family, not surprisingly, are still distraught, and his mother broke down several times during our interview. For her, the revolution will mean next to nothing unless Mustafa's killers are brought to justice.
He was a clever boy who knew the Quran and used to earn his own living. Nobody needed to give him anything. He used to take care of his brothers and his sisters and used to bring me medicine or whatever I needed. He was a real man. First of all, I blame the president, his son, and the interior minister, Habib al-Adli. I want to put them all in Tahrir Square and cut them to pieces. People like that shouldn't be ruling our country. They're a big mafia. They and the state security used to oppress the people, imprison them, and bury them alive.
Mustafa used to go to the demonstration every day, just to look and to take part, never to do anything wrong. But the day before he died on January 28th, he told us he would die in the cause of regime change.
Mustafa's mother has kept his room as it was before his death. She told us that when he died, he held up his forefinger to testify there's only one God. She showed us his blood-stained clothes. And she said her son's death would have been in vain unless the old regime is purged from Egypt's power structures. According to the United Nations, some 20-30% of the Egyptian population lives below the poverty line, surviving on just $2 a day. There's a lack of adequate resources for essential services such as schools and hospitals. And that's why the Farouk Hospital in Cairo, which is run by the opposition Muslim Brotherhood, is popular with patients.
This hospital is affiliated to the Muslim Brotherhood and provides all kinds of medical services to ordinary people. It's necessary because government hospitals are either very unreliable or poorly resourced. But despite the need for places like this, during the Mubarak era they were severely harassed or even closed down.
The Brotherhood has gained the trust of millions by providing services to ordinary people such as hospitals and schools. But elements of the old regime feel that it's using the front of public services, such as this hospital, to spread its message of political Islam. And they continually warn the West that political Islam poses a threat.
The truth is that they accept freedom and democracy only if it suits them. There were elections in Egypt in 2005 in which we did well, and the same thing happened in Palestine in 2007. But the West didn't like the results, so they didn't welcome it.
The Muslim Brotherhood was Egypt's main opposition group during the Mubarak years. It was severely repressed for advocating an Islamic alternative to military rule and strict secularism. But in post-revolution Egypt, the Brotherhood is expected to play a prominent role, even if it seems reluctant to transform its obvious grassroots support into real political power.
The Muslim Brotherhood does not aspire to take the reins of power, and we won't take power unless the Egyptian street asks us to. Democracy means the people have the right to choose who represents them.
This former Muslim Brotherhood member feels that Islamists should take power in Egypt, because that's how they can best affect social change. He thinks minority secular forces will fill the gap otherwise.
It is wrong to say, I don't like authority, I am very peaceful man, as if the authority is a crime.
Cairo is obviously an overwhelmingly Islamic city with a predominantly Muslim population. And if there are free and fair elections in Egypt, inevitably it will become more Islamic and more anti-Israel and anti-West. But there are still powerful forces in this country trying to prevent that from happening.
Back near the Gaza border, the pro-Palestinian activists have been shaken by being chased out of Al-Arish.
Okay, but where is our backup, man? Where's all the guys who said they were going to join us last night, man? I'm getting tired of this. We're getting sold down the river and getting sorry, but I mean, what? You know, it's like we're risking our lives for these and they don't even turn up in the morning.
But despite the misgivings of some, the group leader, Ahmed, decides to plow on to the Rafah border. We make it past the checkpoints to Rafah, but at the border, it's a waiting game. The guards are naturally suspicious of the convoy's intentions.
Well, we're at the Rafah border at the moment, and I'm going to be quite discreet because we're not actually allowed to film here. But what seems to be happening is that we've been let down by the Egyptians, who seem to have been intimidated by the ruckus that happened in Al-Arish.
After 5 long hours, we're let through, minus our Egyptian contingent. We're the first peace delegation to enter Gaza since the Egyptian Revolution.
This is for all of us. Again, we've made it through and we're getting ready to take a bus right now.
But the celebrations are muted. We realize that we were probably only let in because we're a small group of foreigners. The next few days are wonderful and heartbreaking at the same time. We're welcomed with open arms by the democratically elected Hamas government, which major Western powers consider to be a terrorist organization.
The contrast between the Egyptian side of the border and the Palestinian side is absolutely stark. On the Egyptian side, we were always being questioned, our motives always coming under suspicion. But on the Palestinian side, we received an amazing welcome. The Palestinians really seem to have a quiet dignity about them.
were taken on a tour of Gaza by our Hamas hosts. We witnessed the destruction wreaked upon the territory during the Israeli invasion 2 years ago, a bombardment which killed around 1,400 Palestinians and destroyed much of Gaza's infrastructure. We meet the Samouni family, 29 members of which were killed by the Israelis in January 2009. The Israeli Defense Forces invaded this area called Zaytun, killing 48 people and destroying 27 homes, a mosque, and a number of farms.
I found it difficult to believe what I saw. I saw my mother's head blown off. My father's kidney was outside his body, and he was very scared to die. I felt terrified seeing all these dead bodies that were my family. When we tried to get out of the building, we met some of the Israelis who said, "Go back to die."
A charity has supplied the Samouni children with this play equipment, but 2 years on, the family is still without basic needs, and the children continue to suffer from the trauma of Israel's attack.
I'm a huge believer that the best time to act is always now. And what we've seen in the Arab world with Egypt and Tunisia and other places is that the people have the power to achieve anything they want. 4 years of blockade seems more than enough for me. I can't believe we wouldn't act very soon, and I want to see us act now, quite frankly, because this blockade could be over tomorrow. If the Egyptian people decide en masse to do what they've done in Tahrir Square, the blockade will be over, and it won't matter what Israel does.
In 18 days, the people of Egypt changed the course of history. Many observers lauded the military's role in refusing to fire at protesters. But we also shouldn't forget that the military has deep links with its US counterpart, as well as the Pentagon. The US's main concern remains the protection of Israel, and it's said any new regime in Cairo must honor its treaty obligations. And as if on cue, the Egyptian military immediately said it would do exactly that, to the great relief of Tel Aviv. As for Ahmed al-Assi, he remains the eternal optimist.
We've had, a major brain drain operation that's been going on for 30 years just because we had a corrupt regime. So naturally, you didn't have the best man for the job. Now, I feel that we're headed towards appointing the best people in various jobs, whether it be in private sector or public sector.
This is where it all started, Meydan Tahrir in central Cairo, where the hopes and aspirations of the revolution were articulated. This square was full of protesters about a week ago, but they've since been cleared away by army and people I can only describe as thugs. So although Egypt has changed immeasurably over the last 2 months, the road to travel is still long. This is very much still an incomplete revolution.
شعب يا معلم يا صابر اتكلم يا شعب يا معلم يا صابر اتكلم